team or person doing a thing in the ACC or Big 12. Although my 10,000-foot curveball may lead to some smaller, my macro curveball may lead to some micro curveballs.
Well, there we go. And we welcome you to the Sports Block Podcast for this week. Nathan Stack in here, and we're changing things up a bit. Travis is unable to make it this week for our normal stint, so I'm pleased to be joined early in our podcast here this week by my good friend and resident college football expert from the Northwest Iowa Review, fresh off his vacation in what is well-known Big Ten country out there in the Seattle, Washington area. It's Charlie Hildebrand. Charlie, welcome back, my friend. I hope you are refreshed, well-rested, and ready to go.
I am. I was in Big Ten country, so I ate breakfast when we would go to diners like I was a Wisconsin fan, being like, how much can I shove into my mouth? I had so many pancakes and waffles, but they were delicious.
Did you have Miller Lite with breakfast, too? Because I imagine that's what a Wisconsiner might do. They'd have to have a beer with breakfast.
That's true. I didn't go that far. At 39, I am not good. I mean, I can maybe occasionally have, like, one beer at noon. Mm-hmm. I cannot do, like, the, let's have three or four drinks, and then I'll take a nap for 2 hours and then wake up and be good the rest of the day. I think those days are behind me now.
Well, fair enough. But you had a great time on vacation?
I did have a great time. My nephew told me 100,000 times that Mount Rainier is the fifth largest mountain in the United States. I don't know if that's true, but he kept saying it. I'm assuming he's correct. If he's not, then I apologize for giving anybody misleading information.
Well, we'll check that out here as we continue along here. So we today are finishing up.
To be fair, sort of related. This is semi-related to what we're going to talk about. The Airbnb we were at did have a pickleball court. I played some pickleball with my nephew, who's 8 years old. And while we were playing pickleball, he told me he used to play pickleball in college at the University of Arizona, where he won 2 state titles. And then he went on to play internationally. And then he forgot how to play pickleball, so he had to relearn it all over again. So if you're like, oh, is this a child that only tells the truth all the time? I would say the answer to that is probably no. I don't think he probably won any collegiate state titles in Arizona. I feel like my sister would have brought that up at some point in time, especially since they don't live in Arizona. But that's our tie-in to Big 12 country. Not that we have to start with the Big 12. We can start with whatever conference you want, but I wanted to get a quick tie in there. Well, also, to vamp for a bit, if you are still looking up mountain heights in the U.S.
I am. I do have Mount Rainier. What, according to Google, in an AI overview, so take AI for what it's worth, but Mount Rainier is a towering stratovolcano in the Cascade Range of Washington State, reaching 14,410 feet and holding the title of the tallest peak in the contiguous United States. So,
interesting. So if it is the fifth largest, that would mean that the larger ones would have to be in Alaska or Hawaii.
Correct. I know McKinley is higher, I believe. Rainier, I would have to say, would be second, I believe. But your nephew.
Well, kudos to him because he can see it when he's in. I mean, they live like an hour outside Seattle, but it's, you know, big enough that they can see it. So we are excited to tell him it's the biggest in the contiguous 48 states.
There you go. Yes. Recall last week we talked about the SEC, the Sun Belt, Conference USA, and the American. This week we are wrapping up our conference previews with the Big 12 and the ACC. And then next week, we will have our 12 playoff. We'll reveal each of our 12 college football playoff teams, reveal some of the big bowls, you know, Rose Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, all that jazz. Our Heisman Trophy winner, and then any other bits of info or awards that we want to get into here, we can get to all of that next
week. Any other fun shenanigans we come up with.
Yes. And the reason why I kind of had set it up this way with the previews and wanting to hold off on the ACC and the Big 12 until last is because it nicely coincides with week zero in college football, which begins this week. We have a Big 12 conference game being played in Ireland. Yes, the Farm Bowl between Iowa State and Kansas State has gone to to Dublin, to Ireland.
The teams of corn have gone to the land of potatoes.
Yes, yes, and then the four-leaf clovers and the lucky Irish. But that's not the only game this week.
I'll be honest, I forgot there were any other games, partially because there's a lot of Iowa State fans around here, mm-hmm. and we are also interviewing the eight guys in our from our coverage area who are on FBS rosters, mm-hmm. and there's one from Kansas State and one from Iowa State.
Whoa.
So I have been much more worried about that, transcribing interviews and interviewing guys like that, that I have forgotten that there were other Week Zero games.
And so you know, your paper has a vested interest in this. Are they sending you to Ireland to watch this game?
If they are, I should say a little inside baseball. We are recording this on a Tuesday evening. If they are sending me to that, they have not told me ahead of time, and I'm going to have to get a very expedited passport. Because the one I got in 2007, I don't believe is up to date anymore. I think passports last for 10 years, if I remember right.
Yeah, it might not. You're right on that. Yes, so we have a ranked battle between Iowa State and Kansas State. If you recall last year, it was Florida State and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech beat Florida State. We thought it was a big upset. And then Florida
State. And that was while I was in Seattle last year.
Yes, yes.
I don't remember if I said, I forget who I told to. I don't remember if I said that on here, but we were going through, I think it's called the Hoy Rainforest. And I checked on my phone, and it was a close game. And I was like, well, that won't stay that way. And then we got done, and I checked again and told my brother-in-law, and we were both stunned to see that Florida State lost.
Yes.
And it turned out they'd lose 9 more times that season.
Yes, and it turned out that that wasn't such a stunning upset. Other games in our Week Zero, which they aren't advertising as much. I mean, I don't know why, but we got to put more emphasis on Week Zero here because it's a fun nonsensical thing that college football does, one of the many nonsensical fun things. But we have Idaho State at UNLV, Fresno State at Kansas, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Central Time on Fox, then 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central on CBS Sports Network, Sam Houston State in Western Kentucky, so you have a Conference USA matchup there. And then to cap it all off, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central Time on CBS, Stanford and Hawaii. So, you know, you could settle in, you know, have a nice luau and watch Stanford and Hawaii. So 5 games with there only being one ranked matchup, Iowa State and Kansas State. But we have 2 conference games, 3 Big 12 schools in all, and an ACC squad. So, I looked ahead. So
I did not realize all of that. I mean, I figured the Big 12 going last was because of Iowa State and Kansas State. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I forgot about the ACC thing. So kudos to you, Stacken, for shaking it out this way.
Thank you. Thank you. And you know how much, how vested we are with Stanford in the ACC. Because when you think ACC, you immediately think Stanford. So
I mean, look, you think of Stanford, you think of the coast sometimes. Which coast? Who cares? One of the coasts.
Yes. So, I will give you the option of choosing either the ACC first or the Big 12.
I think we should do the Big 12 first.
All right. Very good. This is a conference that I want to say kind of cannibalized itself last year. There were a number of good teams. Remember, like BYU, Arizona State, of course, came out of nowhere. Kansas State, like it. There were just Utah had a bad year last year, I guess, but there were a number of teams that were in contention for a college football playoff spot, and they just kind of kept beating up on one another. And as I went through the previews for the teams for the conference this year, I have this, and I hope it's not going to happen this way. I hope there's one or two teams that emerges from the pack. But I have a sense, or just a funny feeling, that we're going to see something similar to where the Big 12 kind of cannibalizes on itself, in part because of how schedules are set up. Hopefully this conference can get at least 2 teams in. Now I do look at it and I see 4 teams that I think are head and shoulders above the rest of the conference. But that doesn't mean that some other teams in the middle of the pack might not get one of these teams at the top, or those teams at the top might, as I said, cannibalize on one another based on schedules. It's just something that I fear for this conference that I think is better than what maybe some outsiders might think.
I mean, I think that that's basically what's going to happen, too. I mean, I think the Big 12 is the closest to the NFL, not necessarily in terms of the talent on the field, although I think there's still obviously tons of talented players in the Big 12. But just that the difference between the best teams and the worst teams is just smaller than it is in the other conferences, especially when you get rid of, like, the best team and the worst team. Like, Ben, well, I think there's 16 teams in the Big 12, so teams 2 through 15.
Yep.
I think a lot of times it'd be like, yeah, team 2 is better than team 15. I don't know if they're probably that much more than 10 or 14 points better, which in every other conference, especially in the Big 10 and the SEC, I think the second best team and the second worst team might be 4, 5, 6 touchdowns different than each other. And that the way that it's the closest to the NFL, that is that just the difference between being 10-2 in the Big 12 and being 4-8, which I realize some of those are non-conference games that you don't have as much control over. Mm-hmm. But the difference between going 10-2 and 4-8, much like the NFL, is like the difference between going, you know, 4-13 and 13-4. Mm-hmm. That it's like, yeah, it's, you know, like one or two possessions every game. And if you get those to go your way and get the right breaks, you can play in the conference title game and you might win it. And if it's a game where you are, you know, negative turnover margin, or a season where you're a little, like, negative in turnover margin and have a few more penalties than you wanted in opportune times, it could be that you're like, well, you know, we lost 9 games, 8 of them were by 7 points or less. We probably should have been 6-6 and 7-5, but we're not going to a bowl game because there's just not much difference talent-wise and playing level-wise between us and most of the other teams in the conference.
Exactly right. So I have 4 teams that I think are going to factor into the Big 12 championship game. I'm not going to reveal, we won't reveal our Big 12 championship games, but are there, how many teams do you think have a viable chance, or do you think are really going to kind of separate themselves from the pack?
I think like 8 teams have a viable chance in terms of, like, I wouldn't be stunned if you told me, like, I think if I remember right, last year going into the final week, there were like 4 teams that could still play in the Big 12 title game. Mm-hmm. And if you go the last 2 weeks, I think it was like 6 or 8. I say 8 this year because I think it will be like that. Okay. I do think when we get to the last Saturday, it'll be like, okay, well, some of these teams have a chance, but I don't expect it to work out that way. So if you want to get more specific, I think, like you, there are probably 4 teams that I would put in kind of an upper tier above the rest. I think I talked about this with the Big Ten last week. I think there's 4 that I would put in kind of the top tier, but I think there's probably another 4 or 5 I'd put in the second tier that I would not be the least bit surprised if they were in the hunt with 2 weeks left in the regular season. And let's remember that last year, nobody thought at this time that Arizona State would be playing. We wouldn't have thought they'd be in the top 4 in the conference, let alone they'd comfortably beat Ohio or beat Iowa State in the conference title game and, you know, have the miraculous run that they did.
Right, right. They were predicted to finish dead last in the conference last year, Arizona State. So I would like, so I have 4 teams, you have 4 teams. Let's go, I'll have you reveal one of your teams first, and if I have it, I'll say it, and then we'll just see if we kind of agree on the top 4 teams in the conference. So who is one of
we
your...
We can do that, I should say. Is this the point where you want me to reveal my macro 10,000-foot curveball?
Yes. When you can unleash that puppy.
Now is the best time to do it. Okay. That's why I brought it up.
Yes.
I did not do this with any of the other conferences we've done. Since I have got back from vacation, I purchased NCAA Football 26.
Ooh.
Tonight was the first time I booted it up.
Okay.
I had some thoughts on who I thought would win the Big 12 and the ACC. The Big 12, I was like, I really don't know. What if I just simulate an entire season before I start to stack in?
Oh.
And do that as my ACC and my Big 12 results.
Oh, I like that.
So is my curveball. Honestly, because with the Big 12, it's like, that probably is as good of a guess as me. I think with the other conferences, at least at top, there could be some surprises.
Yes.
But it's like, yeah, we probably have more of an idea. The Big 12, you know, much like the College Game Day final 15 years ago, yes, where they talk about the ACC spinning the wheel of destiny. Mm-hmm. I think that's just going to be the Big 12 for like the next 3 to 5 years, unless there's more dynamic shifts. So mm-hmm. I figured this is as good of a way as any.
Right.
And also this way I can give you standings and game by game results for any team you want now too.
That's great. That is great. Okay, so what's one of your top four teams then?
I'm going to start with the least surprising, at least of the four that I have, to me the least surprising, and one that I think there's probably, they might not be in your top four, but there's a good chance they are, and if they aren't, they're probably close. I'm going to say Kansas State.
Yep, absolutely.
Who I think, weirdly, we'll see how it plays out, but, you know, and obviously you can win a conference with 3 losses or 4 losses in theory. But now that we don't have divisions anymore and it's just the top two, mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to get as much as the old school Big 12 South or the old school Big 10 West, where it's like, oh, wow, how did this 9-3 or 8-4 team get in there?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have more than 2 conference losses, it's going to be tough to make conference title games. That's all to say that I do have Kansas State in the top four. I think they basically play a Big 12 elimination game the first week of the season against Iowa State. And I'm stunned that these two teams are doing this. And part of this is, you know, I'm a Nebraska fan who remembers when they went out to Ireland to play Northwestern, and everyone thought Nebraska would win, and then they lost, and Scott Frost got fired, you know, 3 weeks later, and they ended up going 4-8. That when you lose those opening overseas games, especially if you have medium to high expectations, it can really screw up the rest of your season.
It can, and you know that, you know, so Kansas State, Avery Johnson, one of the better returning quarterbacks, certainly in the conference. I trust Chris Klieman and his recruiting process and just getting the Kansas State program to where, I mean, they're about as consistent of a program as any, not only in the Big 12, but I would say in all of college football, going back to the days of Bill Snyder. That is a huge game with Iowa State this Saturday. I do think Kansas State, I think Kansas State is better than Iowa State, in large part just because of the weapons that Rocco Becht, the Cyclones quarterback, has lost from last year. You know, his top two wide receivers, both drafted by the Texans, ironically enough, but in Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins. But I just like Kansas State a little bit more. And if you look at the schedule here for both of these teams, Kansas State gets North Dakota and Army both at home after their game with Iowa State. Iowa State comes back to face South Dakota, good team from the FCS, but they should beat them, no problem. But then they have Iowa at home,
They should beat them, but, you know, if you're coming back from a trip overseas where you don't play that well and lose and are a little bit down, I'm not predicting that they're going to lose, but let's just hypothetically say Iowa State loses in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Would we be stunned then if the next week they have a hangover game and it's the middle of the fourth quarter and we're like, well, USD's got the ball and they're only down 13-20 right now.
Right.
Are they going to go for two if they score to try to take the lead?
Yes. Yep. No, I could definitely see that. It could be a definite hangover game. But I'm looking at that at the game against Iowa. That's a rivalry game. And if you lose that one, on top of losing to Kansas State, you're 1-2. You have to go perfect the rest of the way. And I don't see that happening with this Iowa State squad. So Kansas State has a little bit more of a cushion in the next couple of games with North Dakota and Army. Though Army can be tricky, too. I'm not trying to discredit our armed forces at all. But it does seem to me that Iowa State has a little more difficult path with Iowa.
There are
in
more
there.
Landmines, especially early, yes, on what, yep, Iowa State's schedule.
Yep. But I agree with you on Kansas State. I just think they're really good. And if you look at the schedule here, to quote Woody Page from Around the Horn, their road games are against Arizona. Arizona not going to be that great. They're at Baylor.
It's worth noting, I think it's a Friday night game, and that's things get weird. I do think Kansas State's enough better that they should be able to beat Arizona. But that could be one that we look back in November and we're like, why'd they lose? Be like, oh, it was a night game on the road on a Friday night? Okay.
And then their other road games are at Baylor, at Kansas, and at Utah, as well as at Oklahoma State. I would say they are probably going to lose at most two road games this year, and two road games only, because their home slate is, got pretty easy teams in there, or easy by comparison. So I think Kansas State, definitely one of the top four teams in this conference, and I think likely has a pretty good chance of playing in Arlington at Jerry World here come the end of the season.
Yeah, I think they've got a few tough games, especially the opener against Iowa State, and then after that, I think it's like Texas Tech, who's the new, like, hey, look how many transfers we can get at home. So depending on how you feel about that, that could be a tough game. And then I think like two tough games on the road, probably, if there aren't any major upsets, which is always a dangerous thing to say in college football. But like you said, I don't think them going. I would expect that there's a pretty good chance they're going to go like 9-3 or 10-2. If they were 8-4, I'd be surprised. Yep. Not like shocked, but surprised. If they were worse at 8-4, I would be surprised outside of like, hey, we had seven starters get hurt in week two.
The thing with Texas Tech, though, is that Quentin Joyner, their transfer running back from
USC. Yeah, that was like just today, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple of days ago. So that's a significant weapon that Texas Tech has lost, and we'll see how that figures into their offense. But I mean, he was one of these big name transfers, and that's a significant loss for the Red Raider offense. But you're right, that Texas Tech is still a difficult team. Another team that I think is going to be at the top half here, and it should be no surprise here. They were the surprise of the conference last year, but it's Arizona State. They don't have Cam Scataboo in the backfield, but they do have Sam Levitt, the quarterback, and they return a lot of experience, a lot of starting offensive linemen, weapons on the outside, the defense. I believe 9 starters are coming back. So Arizona State is going to be really good once again. They have three difficult road games that I think will make or break their season. At Baylor, September 20th. At Utah, October 11th, and at Iowa State, November 1st. No, Colorado, November 22nd, that could be iffy too. I'm not too high on Colorado this year, just given the significant players that they lost last year in Travis Hunter and, of course, Shedeur Sanders. But I think if Arizona State can navigate that minefield, those three games in there, if they only lose two of them and can go undefeated the rest of the way, I think Arizona State's probably going to be in Arlington and certainly could factor or maybe have a spot in the college football playoff. It's going to be dicey, though. Those three road games will make or break their season.
I agree with what you said. I would also throw in that at Iowa State and at Colorado are both in November also, where you never know. It could be that it's like, well, it's 48 and sunny, and it's a 3:30 game, and it's not that bad. It could also be a night game where, you know, it's 17 degrees with a 40-mile-an-hour wind. Yep. And if that's the case, I think sometimes we can get a little too far into, like, the weather affecting things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know it's cold in Arizona at night. I mean, I realize that. But, you know, if there's snow and there's a nasty side wind, especially when you don't have Cam Scataboo anymore to take some pressure off your passing game, I think that can make it a lot tougher.
Yep.
I also have Arizona State in the top four. I should say I was going overall record. Yep. I should go by conference record. So in the top four, I've got another team. We could say that there's kind of a group of five in the top five spots in the conference. But
what's your next team then?
My next team is a team who has had a guy start at quarterback for forever, but he's not there anymore, and he missed half the time anyways. This is my fifth team that has the same conference record, but would not be the least bit surprised if they had a big bounce back year. The Utah Utes.
Yes, yes, I agree. They are in my top four. And a very disappointing year last year offensively. They had a lot of injuries. Dampier is a transfer from New Mexico. He's a dual threat quarterback. You have to imagine Kyle Whittingham is going to have the defense and special teams up to par, up to snuff here. And their schedule, I got to tell you, it's very manageable, very easy, I would say. If you're looking for one of those teams that maybe is not the, one of the 12 best, but is navigating it through, kind of like Indiana, and we'll get to, I have a couple of thoughts, we'll get to Indiana and others next week. But if you look at their schedule, Morgantown, West Virginia, always a difficult place to play, especially if you're coming from out west, and out there, that could be difficult, but Utah's a better team than West Virginia. They're better than BYU. I get it's the holy war. I get it's going to be in Provo. But BYU doesn't have Jake Tetzloff anymore. He transferred out of there. There was a sexual assault case or whatever. He's now at Tulane. So all the kind of you offense and thinking, oh, they're going to be really good once again. You lose Tetzloff. I don't know. They did name their starting quarterback today, I believe. It is a freshman. Let me see if I get this right here. No, I don't have it, but he's like Bear. Bear is his name. Bear Boxer or something like that. I'll see if I can get it pulled up.
Here. I do not have that in my Phil Steele. Utah is starting a guy named Bear?
No, BYU is.
Oh, BYU is.
Because Jake Tetzloff isn't there anymore. So I don't know what that's necessarily going to do for BYU, but I don't. It's not Jake Tetzloff in that offense last year. So I don't think that's, even though it's the holy war, I don't think it's going to be quite as difficult as it might be. And then you have road games at Baylor and Kansas. Baylor's that the tricky one for me in there, because I think Baylor's going to be much improved this year. I think they're just better than Kansas, even though Kansas has Jalen Daniels back for what, I mean, it seems like he's been in college for at least a half a decade, if not longer. But I just like the way the schedule sets up for Utah, and they can let Devin Dampier adjust to the increased level of competition. And I just think Utah's in for a bounce back season. So I agree with you.
Yeah, the other big thing is that Utah, I think they lost five games by a touchdown or less last year, and they weren't great on offense. They were good on defense, and they've got seven starter defense. So I would assume that the defense will still play well. The offense with 10 guys with starting experience, whether it was at Utah or somewhere else, are back. So you think if your defense is still good, your offense is maybe a touchdown better a game, that can take you from going 5-7 to going, 9-3 or 10-2 potentially then.
And just to confirm, yes, Bear Bachmeier, freshman, is the starting quarterback for BYU. He will wear number 47, and he's a true freshman. He was a transfer, spent the spring at Stanford, but transferred to BYU in early May. So he is Bear Bachmeier. Name.
Something great about that. According to my Phil Steele, BYU will potentially also start a receiver named Tiger Bachmeier.
Oh, I would imagine they have to be.
So
they have to be
bear and a tiger.
Their parents, I hope their parents are like animal enthusiasts or environmental.
Who knows? Maybe they're like, hey, we know our sons need to be tough. We send them out at age 5 with no name. Right. Whatever the animal they kill to survive is what we name them.
Yep.
I don't think that's what they do, but I suppose it's possible.
My fourth team then, and I referenced them earlier, Baylor. I don't know if you have Baylor in your top four, but Dave Aranda is awesome.
Well, Stacken, let me tell you, I would have if I wouldn't have had done this college football simulation thing. But because of that, I do not.
Sawyer Robertson, name to keep in mind for in regards to Baylor. He's their quarterback. He didn't play the first two games, didn't start the first two games, but still threw for over 3,000 yards and 28 touchdowns. They have some good weapons in there. The defense is going to get better. Baylor's schedule, they do have a tricky game week 2 against SMU. That'll be tough, but their schedule sets up really nicely for Baylor to have a good year to, not a bounce back year, but to continue to improve off of last year when they were, 7-5, I believe?
8-5.
Yep, they had a loss to LSU in the Texas Bowl, but Really good regular season, so I do expect Baylor to be a game or two better than last year. But Baylor would be my fourth team in that tier, that four-tier category.
I should say that unofficially, I think Baylor will be much better than what I have been going officially based off my simulation. But based off the guys they've got back, and especially the schedule, I think they've got 18 guys back on offense and defense with starting experience. Gotta like that for a team that won 8 regular season games. Mm-hmm. According to my video game simulation, though, Baylor will be the kind of what I mentioned earlier, a team that suffers from the, like, yep, you lost a lot of games by 3 points or 6 points or 7 points.
Oh, no, did their field goal kicker get hurt?
We'll go with their field goal kicker got hurt and that somebody must have gotten suspended a couple of times.
Oh, there we go. Oh, well, you know what? It's Baylor, so anything is possible.
That's true.
So who is that fourth team that you have then?
Well, I have not mentioned either of the teams I have, or do we want to do?
Yes.
We're not going to do conference, so we'll just do teams I've got towards the top.
Yeah.
There's two more. Do you want to go with the more surprising or the less surprising one first?
More surprising.
More surprising. Cincinnati Bearcats.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. I don't see that happening. No. I'm just not even going to kind of entertain that here. What do we got? Scott Satterfield.
Well, this is the other end of the spectrum from Baylor, where there are a lot of close games that Cincinnati just happens to find a way to just win and is like, huh, I don't know if they're as good as their they end up being like the TCU team that went on to play Georgia in the national title game.
Okay.
It's like, man, you won a lot of games really close, and I don't know if you're quite as good as your record, but you, so let's see,
did they beat Nebraska in your video game simulation?
No, to make things even weirder, and I did not juice the system at all, I simulated everything, didn't change a thing.
Mm-hmm.
They lose to Nebraska 34-16 to open the year.
Yikes.
And you think, man, that's tough. And then, man, do they get on a roll after that.
Okay.
Well, and win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games by 6 points or less.
All right. Okay. And that includes games against Kansas and Iowa State.
Let's see. They, yep, have both a 31-28 win over at Kansas, and then, shockingly, one of their not-close games, a 41-23 win at home over Iowa State.
Ooh, okay. Scott Satterfield, again, came from Louisville. He's the head coach now at Cincinnati. His third year. It's kind of a make-or-break year for him. Brendan Sorsby, their quarterback, we'll see what he can do. But I have Cincinnati kind of right in the middle of the pack at 6-6. I do think, bowl eligibility seems like a possibility. So, yeah, I'll give Cincinnati 6-6 in a bowl berth, but I don't have them sniffing near the Big 12 championship game.
The upside, we will say, their defense, like, not great, but not terrible last year. They gave up 24.5 points a game, which in the Big 12, that's not awful. They've got 8 starters back on defense, so you think you trim a field goal off that and you're giving up 21 points a game on defense.
Yeah.
They've got 7 starters back on offense along with their quarterback and bring in a transfer at running back from Wisconsin, Tawny Walker. And according to NCAA 26, Brendan Sorsby is going to have a pretty good year, and Tawny Walker is going to have a lights out year at running back.
Ooh,
like, I don't have it pulled up anymore, but like 1,800 yards and 25 touchdowns, and like, oh wow, this is the best running back in the conference this year.
I think that that's got to be Heisman Trophy candidate worthy stats there for him. Okay, so what's the
We can get into that next week, Zach.
Yes, we can. How about the...
I will spoil that he does not win the Heisman in this simulation. That's all I will say.
Okay.
But quite a good season.
Yeah, still good, very good season. And how about the less surprising team?
Okay, and I should say, this would have been surprising at this point in time last year. And I think 3 weeks ago would have been a tad less surprising today, a bit more so with injury news. But the game has not updated its rosters yet. So the other one, Texas Tech, with all of the transfers they have.
Okay.
That even with a A painful lie. I don't say that, you know, to have a pun. I didn't mean it that way. But an unfortunate loss at running back with Quentin Joyner, but that they still have 21 guys with, or well, I guess not without him, 19 guys with, they're sorry, 20 guys with starting experience. And, you know, they won 8 games last year, 8-4 before a loss in the bowl game to Arkansas. And again, you think, hey, a little bit better on offense. You cut out a touchdown on defense, you know, with all the starters back. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's a bigger year. And this would be, I mean, this will, I guess, be kind of a, I know it worked in softball for Texas Tech. They got that one pitcher and made a deep run. I know they didn't win the national title, but made a deep run.
Got to the national championship series against Texas. You
know, I couldn't remember if they made it to the final two or the final four, but this will be kind of like with Colorado the last couple of years. This will kind of be like a litmus test thing for how many boosters, especially at, you know, the non, like, 10 powerhouse schools are like, you know what, we're going to go all in and try to buy all these players NIL style and bring in everybody new and see how much continuity matters, see how much chemistry matters, and how much is just, hey, we found a way to get a lot of talent on the field together.
Yep. Texas Tech would be in my tier two. I have them at 8-4, 5-4 in conference, along with TCU and Iowa State. I have them both at 8-4, 6-3 in conference play. And then Kansas at 7-5, 5-4 in conference play. I really like Jalen Daniels. I've liked him for a couple of years now. He started to play better at the end of last year, and that's when Kansas ultimately made their run to almost bowl eligibility before getting smoked by Baylor in the last week of the season. They have new facilities again, so they're not, you know, displaced like they were last year. So I think we'll see Kansas be a much improved team this year. I do have them at bowl eligibility. TCU, good quarterback Josh Hoover. They should be, I mean, they're going to be a factor, no doubt. Interesting game, week one, final game of week one at North Carolina Monday night. Spoiler alert, I don't think North Carolina is going to be very good. I don't trust Bill Belichick. I don't trust the recruiting process that they've had so far. So I have TCU winning that game. But there are a number.
So do I. 44-30.
Okay.
I can tell you. I mean, I'm not going to say in for the top four, so we can not. I don't want to spoil who's in the conference title game.
Yep.
But after Cincinnati, Texas Tech, Kansas State, Arizona State, and Utah, who I all have at the top five best records in the conference, I can tell you the record or the game by game result for any other team you want in the Big 12.
There we go. Okay, so for TCU, do you have them losing to SMU or beating SMU?
I have them losing to SMU 34-31, and I have TCU finishing 6-6, 4-5 overall.
Okay.
I should also say, overall record, nobody has more than 10 wins in the Big 12, and outside of Houston at 4-8, nobody is worse than 5-7. So 15 teams between 5-7 and 10-2 in the regular season.
Okay, that's good. I do have BYU at 6-6, Colorado 6-6. I do trust Deion Sanders to, you know, continue to get better as a coach. He's brought in Marshall Faulk to help with running backs. The defense will hopefully be a little better stopping the run. They have this Caden Salter transfer from Liberty. Also, they got a 5-star recruit out of Georgia, Julian Lewis, as a quarterback as well. So we'll see if they do anything in that regard. But I think Colorado just middle of the pack, 6-6. Cincinnati, I have them at 6-6. UCF, welcome back, Scott Frost. A lot of questions there on offense. I think UCF will be a much better team here in the next couple of years under Scott Frost. He'll return some of that magic. I have them at 6-6. I think that might, that's being generous to them. Houston 5-7, just missing out. Oklahoma State better this year, but 4-8. Have them tied for the worst in the Big 12 at 2-7 in conference play with West Virginia. Welcome back, Rich Rod, and Houston also finishing 2-7. So we'll see if the heat gets turned up on Mike Gundy at all. But there are some quarterback questions there, and I just think overall lack of talent, not great. So that's towards the bottom. And I guess for Arizona, closing in on bowl eligibility, Noah Fifita is going to keep them within striking distance. He's going to keep them competitive. He's one of the better quarterbacks in the conference, but too many other questions around them, so Arizona misses out. Yeah, that's what I got.
So after my top five, I'll just quickly give you the records in descending order. I've got Iowa State at 8-4, BYU at 7-5, and going a paltry 2-4 away from home. So BYU struggling on the road.
Yep.
Colorado 6-6, TCU 6-6, Oklahoma State 6-6, Arizona 6-6, Kansas 6-6. Kansas also struggling on the road, going 2-3 away from home. Baylor, UCF, and West Virginia all just missing bowl games at 5-7. Okay. And then Houston rounding out the bottom at 4-8.
Okay. A lot of teams that will be bowl eligible for the Big 12, though, with those 6-6 records.
Correct. Only four teams not going to the not going to a bowl game, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, five teams just making it at 6-6. Okay. So where I said the really, I thought this going in, and the video game thinks so even more so than I do, that it is going to be fighting tooth and nail each week for every single game to try to get to six wins. And if you get to 8 or 9 in the conference, or 8 or 9 wins overall in that conference, you should be generally pretty happy.
Any other thoughts on the Big 12 before we move to the final conference of our preview?
I mean, I think the only other thing, I mean, I don't know, we're not doing any playoff picks or national champs this week. Yeah. I've not even figured out totally who's going to be in the playoff or who's going to win the national title. I got a couple ideas on some, like, deep playoff stuff. I do not have a Big 12 team winning the national title, though.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people will mistakenly look at that as like, oh, that means the league is less important or less, you know, less valuable. And maybe from a television standpoint, that's true. From an entertainment standpoint, I think it will be, at least in terms of the games on the field, the most entertaining conference again this year. So if you just say, I don't care who's going to win the title, who's going to have the most NFL draft picks or anything like that, I just want to watch a fun, crazy football game, the Big 12 will probably be your best bet each week.
Yeah, I don't think it should be viewed as an indictment on the league. I fear that there's going to be a lot of cannibalization of the top four teams in this conference. And hopefully we get at least two that separate themselves from the pack and get in. Because Arizona State was the only Big 12 team last year that made it. So hopefully this conference gets at least two teams in, which I think they could, but there certainly has to be some separation.
The other downside, potentially, is I don't remember, I forget all the changes from last year to this year. I don't remember if this was totally the case last year, but I know this year the top four teams, regardless of if you win your conference or not, are the top four seeds. Mm-hmm. But and then that it's just the top five conference champions, regardless of if it's an important conference or not, the top five conference champions. So theoretically, you know, you could have, like, two or three teams in the top four that didn't win their conference and are then taking away some of those spots that later ones could get. I don't think this is going to happen. I think there's a scenario where the Big 12 is like, oh no, we cannibalized ourselves and a better team got upset in the conference title game, which the Big 12 is known for, like the first 5 years of its existence, of teams not playing for the national title because they got upset in the Big 12 title game. And that being a case where, like, oh, man, our conference champ isn't in the top five conference champions, and they're ranked 16th. So, and our highest-ranked team's 13th, but or 12, or let's say, like, 11th. But there's two teams ranked below them that have to get in because they're conference champions. So the Big 12 just gets left out altogether. I want to reiterate, I don't think that's going to happen. But if it does happen, I think the Big 12 is the most likely conference it would happen to.
Yes, without a doubt. I absolutely agree. I do think that the ACC is going to be better this year than it was last year. I see a resurgence for Florida State. I mean, they can't be any worse than they were last year, especially offensively, and I don't think that'll be the case getting Tommy Castellanos from Boston College. We know what he can do. So I do think, you know, Florida State's got some good recruits coming in. Florida State will be better. I have them.
We'll get into how much better, but between us, I'm pretty sure we both have them winning more than the two games last year.
Yes.
In fact, now, whether that's like, oh my God, they're in the conference title game, or like, well, you know, you went 5-7, and that's quite a bit better.
I don't have them going
5-7, but
I do have one team in this conference winning only two games this year.
I have to actually scroll because all these conferences are big enough now that you can't see them all. On one, I also have a team going 2-10, and it's not one of the former Pac-12 schools.
Oh, is it Wake Forest or Virginia?
It is Syracuse.
Oh, well, that's a good pick, too.
Video game does not like Syracuse.
Nope.
Also, opening the season against Tennessee is a way to be like, well, we lost week one, we got a rebound.
They did.
And if you kind of get stuck in a weird... Yeah, according to this, I have they lose to Tennessee, they lose the next week to UConn, then they beat whatever 1AA team they play. They don't have names of the FCS teams.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't win again. They beat Boston College to close the regular season, and they beat an FCS team. And those are their only two wins all year.
Colgate.
It's just a rough year for Syracuse.
Yeah, Colgate is the FCS team that they would play. I have Syracuse at 3-9, 1-7 in conference play. My two-win team is Stanford, but I do have them beating Cal. So there's that. I have Stanford losing to Hawaii this week.
As you said, I don't have either of them that much better, and if I didn't do this, I would still not have Stanford or Cal doing that well. I've got both Stanford and Cal at 4-8 this year.
The one good thing for Syracuse, I guess, that they have going for them is that they did name a starting quarterback earlier this week, and it is the guy from Notre Dame, Steve Angeli. So he's former Notre Dame quarterback, so he's Syracuse's starter, but I don't see good things really happening for Syracuse. I do really like Clemson this year. Klubnik is back, so he's going to be really good. The defense should be better. They got some good running backs, wide receivers who are viable. I think Clemson is going to be really, really good this year. I know there's a lot of talk about Miami with Carson Beck. I kind of soured on Carson Beck after last year. I get it wasn't all his fault. A lot of dropped passes by Georgia receivers. But I'm not sold on Carson Beck being what Cam Ward was last year for Miami. Miami's talented elsewhere, but I don't think Carson Beck is the answer. So I don't even have Miami. I have Miami finishing near the top, but they're not beating Clemson. Clemson is head and shoulders better, and I only have Clemson losing one game, and that's at Georgia Tech, September 13th.
I have three teams that have separated themselves from the rest of the pack in the ACC.
Okay.
I also have Clemson being quite good. I also have Miami being quite good. And it's Carson Beck has a good year. It's a little less to do with Carson Beck, and it is more to do with Miami's defense, which, according to this, Miami's defense will be lights out good. As I am talking a tad bit slower to go to the stats page so I can pull that up. I've got Carson Beck, you know, with a respectable throwing for about 3,500 yards, 29 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, completes 65% of his passes. It's like, sure, that's good. Running back Mark Fletcher Jr. runs for about 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like, pretty good year.
Mm-hmm.
They're solid on offense. It's all good. It is on defense. Where Miami's top two, let's see, yeah, their top two guys combine, an edge rusher and an outside linebacker, combine for 52 tackles for loss and 29 and a half sacks this
Holy
year.
Holy crap, that's a good lethal combo.
Reuben Bain Jr., who's listed as a 93 overall and a right edge rusher with, let's see, with 61 tackles, 21 sacks, 32 tackles for loss. And then teammate outside linebacker, Mohamed Touré, still impressive, although not as impressive as that, finishes with 20 tackles for loss and 8.5 sacks. And it is a relentless pass rush of Miami. Sacking quarterbacks left and right. That also leads to, you know, quite a few intercepted passes and fumbles too. Mm-hmm. And a defense that far and away leads the conference in fewest points scored.
Well, that sounds like a dream scenario for Canes fans. We'll see if that does come to fruition at all. I have 6 teams in the ACC with at least 9 wins this year.
I have 5, and if we jump that to 8-4, I've got 8 teams at 8-4 and better, and 5 teams at 9-3 and better.
Okay. Let's see if either of these teams are in your 8-4 mark, because I have 2 teams at 8-4. I have North Carolina State and Louisville. North Carolina State breaking in a couple of new coordinators, so we'll see how that goes. But C.J. Bailey's back at quarterback. He played well for them last year when he got in there. And Jeff Brohm at Louisville has Miller Moss as a starting quarterback, has a decent running back there, and Isaac Brown. Defense a little iffy here. Louisville will be good, but a little outside the pack here, along with North Carolina State, pun intended there. But I have both. Those are my 8-4 teams in the ACC.
So I've got SMU at 8-4.
Okay.
I've got Louisville also at 8-4. We agree on that. I think Louisville will be good this year, especially under Brohm. NC State basically gets Baylored in this. NC State 4-8 this year.
Oh,
video
no.
game does not like NC State. They beat East Carolina and Virginia to start the year, feeling good about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Then they lose.
No way.
8 of the next 9 games.
Holy crap.
They lose to Wake Forest, to Duke, to Virginia Tech. They beat whatever FCS opponent they play on October 4th.
Campbell.
And then they lose to Notre Dame. They lose to Pittsburgh, who we'll get to later. I am probably higher on Pittsburgh than most other people. Lose to Georgia Tech. Lose to Miami. Lose to Florida State. And their only caveat is that they end the year by beating North Carolina 42-39.
Okay, well, and you have to beat them. I mean, that you have to beat your rival.
If you're going 4-8, you got to beat North Carolina.
Pat Narduzzi, head coach of Pitt, has averaged 7 wins and 5 losses during his Pitt tenure. So then I had to give Pitt a 7-5 record. Eli Holstein, transferred from Alabama last year, 7-0 start, was doing great, but then things kind of fell off the map quickly for Pitt. We'll see if they can finish games a little better, but if Pat Narduzzi is averaging 7 wins and 5 losses, then that's what I'm going to give Pitt.
I've got Pitt going higher than that, and some of these teams, we'll put it this way. I've got 3 teams at the top. I'm not going to say specifically which two are playing in the ACC title game.
Okay, yep.
But it's between Miami, Pittsburgh, and Clemson. And if you look at Pittsburgh's schedule, they've got to play at West Virginia in the backyard brawl. I don't think either of us think West Virginia is going to be great, but that's a weird rivalry game.
Yep.
If they can beat Louisville and they don't stub their toe against West Virginia, it's like, well, they can beat Boston College. I think we both think Florida State's going to be better, but is Florida State going to be like 9 or 10 win good? Maybe not. If they're not, you know, that's a winnable game still.
Yep.
We don't have Syracuse very good. You know, NC State, the video game does not like. I would have them higher, but I'm going to stick with what the game says. I know you've got NC State higher than I do, but that game's in October.
Yep.
And if you win that game too, then all of a sudden it's like, well, you can probably win at Stanford. Stanford's not very good. And then you've got to bye before your 3 stretch at the end of the season of Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, and Miami, which I think that will be kind of the – if Pitt's going to be good, that'll be a make or break stretch.
Yep.
If Pitt's just okay, they'll need to win games before that. But, like, when you look at the schedule, which, you know, we can say this about a lot of teams in the ACC and Big 12 now at times, that it's like it's a pretty manageable schedule when you look at it.
Absolutely. This is a 9-win team, I think, if things bear out. I do have them losing to West Virginia at the backyard brawl. I'm just going to put pencil West Virginia in there getting that win. I do have them losing at Florida State. I have Florida State faring pretty good this year. faring pretty well and really bouncing back in a big way, because I like how their schedule really plays out. It's a tough three-game stretch for Pittsburgh to end the year, no doubt about it. Notre Dame, then what, at Georgia Tech, and home to Miami. Those are three really tough opponents there, so that's going to be tough. But I could easily see Pitt being in that top three there just by schedule alone. You have to navigate through West Virginia and Florida State, but the rest of that schedule prior to the last 3 weeks, as you said, very, very manageable and should get a lot of wins there, eating a lot of W's, Jameis Winston.
Is this where we should talk about Florida State now?
Sure, let's do it.
So, I do have Florida State as much better than last year. I have Florida State as one of the most chaotic teams in the country, though.
Okay.
Based off who they win and who they lose to.
Oh, no.
I do have them going to a bowl game, but, like, just barely. And, you know, I'd probably have Florida State a tad better than this if I wasn't going by what the game simulated.
Yep.
I've got Florida State at 6-6. I've got them beating Alabama 49-46 in the first game of the year.
Oh.
And starting 3-0. And then immediately turning around and losing to Virginia, Miami, and Pittsburgh to fall to 3-3. And then after Stanford, Wake Forest, and Clemson sitting at, 4-5, beating Virginia Tech and NC State to get to 6-5, and then losing at Florida to close the year to finish 6-6. But still, go to a bowl game. I'm sure a lot of Florida State fans wouldn't be pleased at that, but they should at least be like, well, as bad as we were last year, it is a step in the right direction, and at least we're getting extra practices in a bowl game. Yep.
Looking at this, I have Florida State at 9-3. Probably should have them at 8-4. It is worth noting their game against Alabama, that Alabama's starting running back, Jam Miller, will not be playing in that game. He is out with an undisclosed injury. We'll see when his availability will be back. I do have them beating Miami. As I said, I'm not as high on Miami as I should be. The game that I have them beating Miami, so I should have them losing to Pittsburgh. So I might end up ultimately changing this, dropping them to 8-4 and bringing Pitt up to 8-4. But I do have them beating Pitt. I'm losing at Clemson and at NC State. I do have them beating Florida just because of the unknowns regarding DJ Legue. If he's healthy and is playing in that game, I think Florida wins that game. But for him to go a whole season healthy, we just don't know. Again, the calf, the shoulder, a lot of unknowns. So I gave Florida State the benefit of the doubt there. So I have Florida State at 9-3, 6-2 in conference, but not in the ACC championship game.
Also, just for fun, I've got them losing to Florida, and this is not going to change what I picked for the other conferences.
Mm-hmm.
This is Florida going 9-3 overall. And if Florida goes 9-3 against this schedule, it's like, that's pretty impressive, and you should probably hand out a coaching contract extension. They have Florida only losing at Miami to Texas, and then weirdly losing at Kentucky the week after beating Georgia.
Well, okay.
And then also beating Tennessee and Ole Miss and Florida State.
The hangover.
And Texas A&M and LSU, which is like, yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yep. But that loss to Kentucky could keep him out if that were to play out that way. SMU, a surprise team last year, they were the beneficiaries of a schedule that wasn't all that tough. They lost at home to BYU, which looked better in the end. They beat Louisville. They beat Duke in overtime. They lost to Clemson by 3 in the ACC championship game that allowed Clemson to get in. SMU made it as an at-large before getting blown out in the playoff by Penn State. Kevin Jennings is back. This SMU offense should be really good, but they lost a lot on the defensive side, and it really all comes down to Jennings. So if he can limit the turnovers, if the SMU they can replace some of their offensive weapons they lost and certainly improve on the defense by replacing the guys that they lost there, SMU is going to be right back in this mix. Huge game against Baylor, September 6th. That's and then September 20th at TCU. You're playing two Big 12 teams. SMU is going to factor in to who wins the Big 12. I mentioned that, like the cannibalization. Well, SMU is also going to factor in by playing both Baylor and TCU. And, you know, by the other side, the other token here, you're going to see both Baylor and TCU factoring into how SMU ultimately finishes in the ACC and whether or not they can make the college football playoff. I do have Miami beating SMU and Clemson beating SMU, but those are the only two losses that I have for the Mustangs.
I should say unofficially, you know, I would pick SMU to be maybe a tad better than what I've got the game going. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they've got five starters back from a team that was terrible on defense last year, giving up 22 points and about 325 yards a game. So if the defense roughly stays pat and then the offense is just a tad more efficient, honestly, if they basically can find a way to get roughly the same production, they could probably do about the same as they did last year. It's not as bad as a schedule as you might think it would be. And then, you know, obviously, you know, Baylor and TCU may matter in terms of the playoffs. They don't factor into whether they are going to go to the conference title game, probably.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what, like, the seventh tiebreaker is, but at least not the early ones. But, you know, they get Miami at home. They've got to go to Clemson. But they get Louisville at home, too. Mm-hmm. But officially, I have them going 8-4 with losses to Baylor, to Clemson, to Miami, and to Louisville.
Okay. Very well could happen, because, again, it's all kind of on Kevin Jennings' shoulders, and if he doesn't have the supporting cast, you never know, you know, the turnovers, you know, turning, you know, limiting those turnovers might not happen. Duke, Manny Diaz.
That was the next team I was going to bring up, Stackin.
Well, he did great work in year one with Duke, getting them to 9 wins. They have an extremely interesting non-conference schedule. I know that just talked about SMU and playing Baylor and TCU, which I also is it SMU that's playing at Missouri State in one of the more obscure? It's at Missouri State, one of the more obscure games you're going to see from a Power 4 team this year, having to go on the road and play at Missouri State, former FCS team, now Conference USA. But Duke, very manageable schedule outside of the game at Clemson in conference, but it's their non-conference that fascinates me, with a game against Illinois and then at Tulane. That, like, Duke's got a real good chance to finish with at least 9 wins, if not more.
I've got Duke going 9-3 again.
All right, I do too.
They've got a 1-point loss to Illinois, 28-27.
Okay.
Beat Tulane, beat NC State, beat Syracuse. They weirdly get upset at Cal in October, you know, long, long road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And then lose to Clemson, but, you know, beat UConn, beat Virginia, beat North Carolina, beat Wake Forest, and all of a sudden they're 9-3 again. Yep. And, you know, not making the playoff, but going, all things considered, especially historically for Duke, you know, going to a pretty good bowl game for them, you know, outside of, like, the 30s and 40s when they were really good.
I have them beating Illinois and losing at Tulane, and then losing to Georgia Tech and at Clemson. So that's what I have there. But I mentioned Georgia Tech. What are your thoughts on Georgia Tech? Because this is a team that I think could be sneaky good. Well, I don't know sneaky good, because we all know who Haynes King is. Kind of dual threat quarterback there. He can run. He's outstanding. They return a lot of offensive production. The defense should have a number of starters back, so the defense is going to be very good. Interesting game week one at Colorado. That's definitely the tone setter, but with the returning production that Georgia Tech has, I think Tech's in for a very, very good year.
I've got Georgia Tech just at 6-6, kind of an up-and-down year.
Okay.
I've got beating Colorado early as their biggest win, and then basically they blow out the bad teams they play. The mediocre to decent teams are really close games, and then when they play someone good, like, you know, like Clemson or Georgia, they lose more handily. But a lot of close games that they come out on the right side of and then lose to some of the really good teams they play and maybe get upset here or there. But I guess sort of like Florida State, kind of a chaotic year. And they go, and they finish 6-6 again. Okay. Right? Or not again, but 6-6 this year.
The California teams that are in the ACC, Stanford and Cal, any thoughts on them? Cal was a pleasant surprise last year, arguably should have beat Miami in that crazy game last year, but Mendoza is gone. He's at Indiana. I don't think Cal can replace. Jaden Ott is no longer there. They're a great running back. So that's a lot of production, a lot of starts, valuable experience that's gone. I don't have Cal anywhere near a bowl game, 4-8, and Stanford is just going to be horrendous. Andrew Luck being the general manager is helpful. Frank Reich, we'll see what he can do at the collegiate level. I would maybe give him, he's the interim head coach. So what does that mean moving forward? But this is a program going nowhere. Neither California teams are going to be competitive at all.
It's worth noting there was a point in time Frank Reich held the quarterback record for both college football, or at least Division I college football, and the NFL for largest comeback in history.
Ooh. Yeah, okay.
That they when he was in college, I think he went to Maryland. They erased a 28-point deficit to beat Miami, and then in that playoff game against the Bills, I forget what, I think it was like 31. They were down.
Yeah, they were 35-3.
Or sorry, he played for the Bills. It was against the Oilers.
Against the Oilers. Yep, he came back and won like.
I mean, if anyone's going to lead the comeback story, it would make sense it's Frank Reich, but yes. I have them both at 4-8 this year. They both do very poorly on the road, and neither of them make up for it at home. They don't do really any better at home either. They're just not very good this year.
I do think Bill O'Brien keeps Boston College competitive. I have them at 6-6. They could be a little better. Any thoughts on BC?
I would pick BC to be better than what I've got the game going. I would probably pick 6-6 or 7-5. They've got them going 3-9, and it really going off like, oh, hey, Cal got a win against Boston College. And like, oh, hey, guess what? And Syracuse gets a win against Boston College. Like, things really go poorly for Boston College, according to NCAA 26.
It's a big year for the coaches in the state of Virginia, for those ACC teams, for what do we got here? But Tony Elliott at Virginia and Brent Pry at Virginia Tech. Kyron Drones is back at quarterback for my Hokies, so that is good. They made a change at defensive coordinator, but they lost a lot of talent from last year. Batoon, at running back, that's a big blow. They lost some wide receivers, so I don't know. I just hope I have them at 7-5. I hope that's the case. Both these Virginia coaches might be looking for new jobs though at the end of the year. Certainly, if Tony Elliott doesn't get Virginia to bowl eligibility, he's gone, and 7-5 might not even be enough to save Brent Pry. But we'll see. I will say this just as editorial here: Virginia Tech, if they underachieve again this year, which I fear they will, open up the checkbook and do whatever you can to get Shane Beamer from South Carolina to Virginia Tech. I don't think he would do it because the SEC is so much more competitive than the ACC, but maybe going back home, he sees an opportunity to reinvigorate the program that his father helped build and turn into a juggernaut for so many years in that conference, and he can lead them back to glory. That's what I ultimately want to see. If they cannot do better than 7-5 this year, just be competitive, make a good bowl game, do whatever you can to get Shane Beamer.
I know a couple weeks ago when we talked, I mentioned the Mosquito Bowl book I was reading related to college football, and then also the SEC show on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They talk to Beamer about this, to Shane Beamer. Now, it's worth noting that at the time, he was the head coach at South Carolina, and you're not going to say, like, bad things about your own job to something that's going to be broadcast to millions upon millions of people. So,
yes.
Take it with a grain of salt. But when they were you could see Frank Beamer in the background during different points where he was doing some dinner before the season started. But he made some comment that I'm not going to pull up. I don't have it word for word. I'm going from memory of 2 weeks ago. But basically said something to the effect of, like, I kind of like Virginia Tech, but also I know if I'm at Virginia Tech, I will just always be the guy people refer to as Frank's son. And if I go somewhere else, I can do things on my own. Now, that could, again, just be, you know, like, I know the public eye and the cameras are on me, so that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Or it could be that that's what he really means. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know him, but I would understand the thought of, like, well, it's going to be hard for me to be as successful as my father there. I'm going to try to go somewhere else to do something.
Yeah, I understand. I get that train of thought, but I also think he would be given a larger rope and far more time and more chances than a lot of other coaches would at Virginia Tech. And, I mean, just the name, I think that would really energize the fan base, but it feels like a pipe dream here. Hopefully Brent Pry does really good. I think 7-5 is the ceiling for them, and the floor is 4-8, 5-7, and missing a bowl game. To beat Virginia at the end of the year to get to bowl eligibility would be okay, but yeah, you need to see some strides, and this is a less talented team than the team they had last year.
So video game-wise, I've got Virginia Tech starting out 0-2, winning six consecutive games.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good.
And then losing the final four games of the regular season, including a 24-7 loss to Virginia to finish 6-6.
Well, at least they're bowl eligible. But that
and Virginia, I've got as 8-4.
Oh,
and
okay.
That they, let's see, what would this be? They would be, I think, 7-2, and then lose to Wake Forest and Duke to fall to 7-4, and then lose to, or beat Virginia Tech in the regular season. And then have them going to the LA Bowl to play Hawaii.
Oh, well, there you go. Hey, I mean,
also, since this won't affect the playoff for Virginia Tech at 6-6, I will tell you, they have Virginia Tech going to the, I forget what they call it now, the Meineke Car Care Bowl in Detroit against UConn. So not the sexiest matchup, but it is a bowl game.
With the Athlon magazine, they have them in the Gasparilla Bowl against Missouri. That's the bowl projection there. Final two teams here from this conference. We'll go back to the state of North Carolina. We talked about NC State and Duke already. These other two North Carolina programs, I don't believe, are in for good years. Dave Clawson, no longer at Wake Forest. Jake Dickert is the new head coach. There's going to be a little spark, a little excitement with the offense that he's going to install, but I think it's going to be a long year for Wake Forest. Have them finishing 4-8, but brighter days are ahead. And then the team that everyone is interested to see what will happen is North Carolina with Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson, his girlfriend. We don't know what Bill Belichick is like at the collegiate level. It doesn't seem like recruiting has been all that great. The talent isn't necessarily there. Now, people are excited in Chapel Hill about this and what Bill Belichick can bring, but I don't think you're going to see instant success right away. That week one game against TCU is a tone setter for the year. And maybe they win that game, but I just don't think North Carolina has the talent. And I think this is going to be a learning curve, a learning process for Bill Belichick in year one. And we'll see if he ultimately really wants to stay. But I just don't see North Carolina being that competitive.
Which of those two teams would you like me to start with? One of them I have as a surprise. One of them I do not.
Let's go with Wake Forest here. Because they're the least of interesting team. They're more boring.
Wake Forest, the surprise, other than maybe Pittsburgh. 9-3 overall for Wake Forest, according to NCAA Football 26.
Oh, my. Oh,
they beat Kennesaw State, beat whatever 1AA team they play in Week 2, because this game doesn't have the legal license to say no's.
Let me get that here. Western Carolina.
They beat NC State. They beat Georgia Tech to get to 4-0. They lose to your Hokies to fall to 4-1. Big win for your Hokies.
Yes.
They went at Oregon State, fall to SMU, and then, I guess, then win their next four at Florida State, at Virginia, versus North Carolina, against Delaware, and then they fall to Duke, who also goes 9-3, 27-8. But a 9-3 regular season, and a this has Wake Forest going to the Gasparilla Bowl to play Ole Miss.
Oh.
6-6 Ole Miss, and gets to play 9-3 Wake Forest.
Isn't it weird to say Delaware, calling them an FCS school?
I know. I thought that as I was like, well, they're not FCS, or they're not $1. They're not an FBS school, and I was like, oh, they are. You forgot about that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, they forgot the marketing for that there. Oh, wait, no, that's actually legit. Okay, so that is a big surprise, Wake Forest. There, the game has a between me and the game. That's a 5-game difference there. And now, what about North Carolina?
North Carolina. It looks like they should be in the Big 12. Very chaotic 6-6 for North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Opened the year with a 44-30 loss to TCU.
Okay.
Beat Charlotte. Beat whatever FCS team they play on September 13th
handily.
Beat Richmond handily. They win at UCF over Scott Frost to improve to 3-1.
Okay.
Bye week. Host Clemson. Oh, no, they lost 52-24 to Clemson.
Ooh.
Another bye week. They play at Cal on a Friday night and eke out a 35-30 win. They eke out a 19-7 win over Virginia and a 41-38 win over Syracuse, improving to, what is that? 6-2. Everything's going great. And then they play Stanford. Stanford, who I've got going 4-8, and they lose 51-10 to Stanford.
Oh,
an all-time bad loss.
That would go down as the worst loss of the season if that happens to be the case, 51-10, right? Out of any Power 4 team.
Probably, I mean, unless someone who's undefeated and ranked in the top three, like, I mean, well, yeah. I mean, if it's not number one, it'd be in the top three. Then losing at Wake Forest, losing 31-10 to Duke, and finishing the season with a 42-39 loss at NC State.
Cool.
To be like, well, we're going to a bowl game at 6-6, and I accidentally exited out of that. Who do they go? Who do they play in the bowl game? At 6-6, they are going to the Holiday Bowl to play Oregon State.
Ooh, that's be interesting here. Okay, so outside of the game perspective, is that, or the game prediction, what do you personally think is going to happen with UNC? Is it going to be more like my thought here with them going 4-8, or are they going to be closer to bowl eligibility or get to bowl eligibility like the game thinks? What do you think?
I think they're going to kind of just be on the bubble. I'd be surprised if they were better than 7-5. I don't think they're going to go like 3-9, but I would imagine they're going to be a 6-6 or 5-7 team.
What do you think the impact? Oh, I'm sorry. Were you getting to the impact of Bill Belichick?
I think the schedule's not that bad. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't make a bowl game, but I think they'll be good enough they can get to one or get to 500. I think any Bill Belichick impact will be felt. If there's a positive impact, I think it will be felt much more next year, in year two, as opposed to in year one. I know there are some coaches who are good at coming in and changing everything right away. I feel like he is going to be more of a, if it works, will be more of a builder, and they'll be 5-7 or 6-6 in year one, and then be like, well, they were better in year two, and they were, 8-4. And, they beat somebody that was pretty good, and then, maybe like 9-3 the year after that, now they look good. I don't think it's going to go that well. I think he ends his tenure after 2 or 3 years with essentially like a 500 record. And is like, I am so wealthy, and I'm in my 70s, and I don't want to have to call high school kids at 10:30 at night to try to get them to come to my school.
Yep.
And will say, you know what, I'm glad I tried this, I'm glad my super young girlfriend had fun. I'm tapping out on this, and I'm going to go, watch John Bon Jovi documentaries or whatever he does in his spare time. I think I heard somewhere that he likes Bon Jovi, but I could be getting that mixed up with something else.
Well, he'll just be hanging out with Jordan, and he'll give the reins to his son, Steve, to take there. And you know what? Regarding the recruits, just let Michael Lombardi call everyone, and it'll be fine.
They'll just get hired by the NFL Network or by ESPN, and they'll be like, we need you to come on twice a month and just rank who you think were the four best NFL teams in week 5 of 1988.
Yes.
And he'll be like, that's what I want to do, break down game tape.
Yes.
This is the perfect job for me.
Yep.
And I'm making this all up as I go along. And then they'll be like, you know what? We need to get more people to watch the NFL Network in the offseason, and I'm kind of stealing an idea that I've heard Travis Krenn say, that he's going to be like, hey, we need to have NFL Red Zone in the offseason, but we can't do, like, this year. We need to pick, like, what's a great year from, like, 1994, when there were so many great games. And that's where Bill Belichick will be like, yes, I'm gonna go through and I'm going to study tape, and we're gonna pick twice a month each offseason a great game, a great week
from
each season, starting in 1979. And this will be the games with the best ones, and this is what we will run at Saturday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to compete against Shawshank Redemption on TBS.
Very good. That I like. Any final thoughts on the ACC, or any final thoughts in general before we say so long and really get cracking here on our 12-team playoff?
Not too much. I think the only thing is I feel bad for the Texas Tech running back transfer from USC that got hurt.
Yep.
And or I guess the other thing I should mention, I finished that Mosquito Bowl book on the plane on the way back.
Yes.
It was quite good. The one about the two Marine regiments loaded with college football and NFL players that played a game. It did not go into as much detail in the game as I thought they would. I guess details are fairly scant. They had the final score and the score by quarters and a couple other details, but there wasn't much about the game itself. It also got quite, and I think I mentioned this, that like there were 60 guys that played in it, and 15 went on to die in the war. Some of it was sad reading afterwards. I don't think I've watched any like movies with you before. Mm-hmm. I am not a crier. It is incredibly rare for me to cry about anything. I did not cry. There were a couple of times I like had to close the book for like 2 minutes though, and was like, "I'm going to start crying.
Really?
I don't want to cry on an airplane. I'm not going to do that."
Well, I know you do watch.
It's good. It is sad at times though.
Well, I do know you do like almost weekly movie reviews and whatnot. You watch movies and stuff. Have you given War of the Worlds with Ice Cube a try yet?
We have not watched that yet. It is possible that we do watch that only because we heard it is supposed to be. I mean, I know very little about it other than it's supposed to be like incredibly bad.
It's less than 10%.
And sometimes watching a bad movie and making fun of it on Twitter can work better, because if it's really good, I have found that Ty Rushing, the guy I do that with, do Action Movie Saturday with.
Yep.
If it's really good, there are times we will go like 8 minutes or 10 minutes without tweeting anything because we get pulled into the story. It's when it's bad where it's like, look at all this dumb stuff that we're going to point out and say is silly.
Yep. I think it's still under 10% on Rotten Tomatoes, so...
I know we haven't officially said this, and I don't know what movie we're going to do next or when we're going to go next. There is a movie on Amazon Prime where John Cena is the president of the United States and Idris Elba is the president of the UK.
Oh.
And there's some weird situation where they have to start like fighting terrorists or something. I don't know if that's any good, but that sounds like a very... AI generated this movie for Ty and Charlie to do on Action Movie Saturday. Yeah, so there's a good chance we'll do that. A lot of times we do a football movie when it gets close to football season, so we may pick one of those. I don't think we've done Remember the Titans. Maybe we do that. I don't know.
I can't recall. Have you done Draft Day?
Ooh, we have not done Draft Day. We could do that, although that we may do closer to the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think that one would be better served for April, but that would be a good one to do.
The movie where somehow Kevin, if I remember right, I've only seen it once, the movie where Kevin Costner traded 3 second-round picks to move up to the number one spot in the draft. And I'm like, I don't think anybody would do that.
No.
I think it'd be like, yeah, that may make sense on the chart. We're not giving away the first overall pick for 3 second-round picks.
Oh, no, not just 3 second. It's 3 first-round picks. And then he gets them all back. Oh, but yeah, he does trade 3 seconds. Yeah, he pulls off multiple trades, and it makes the Cleveland Browns look great.
It does, and you know what? They need that. They don't have a lot of good things happen to them in Cleveland. It's nice that at least in the fictional realm, they have some things work out.
Well, that's how I know it's pure fiction when the Browns are doing good.
Yep. I mean, at least they know not to draft the Wisconsin quarterback number one overall. Right. When's the last Wisconsin quarterback that you were like, yes, this guy can lead a team to a Super Bowl?
Russell Wilson, I believe.
I mean, Russell Wilson did it, but like he's a Wisconsin quarterback his last year. He's really, like, most of his career an NC State quarterback.
Yep. If they don't come to his birthday party, then that's the problem.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that part of it. With Sam Elliott as the Wisconsin coach.
Yes. Yep. So great. So great. Well, Charlie, I appreciate the time as always, my friend. And I look forward to next week where we fill out our predictions, sure to go wrong.
Predictions, and we got some games to talk about.
Yes, yes. Enjoy week zero. Enjoy the Kansas State, Iowa State Farm Bowl clash in Ireland. And we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
All right. Sounds good, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Charlie.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Stacker.
Anytime. You are welcome. Anytime. Charlie Hildebrand, kind enough to join me here, fresh off vacation, here on the Sports Block Podcast, talking ACC and Big 12 there. So great stuff there. As I said, Travis unable to make it this week. Totally fine. He'll be back next week. We will have our college football preview show. He will join us with all of his predictions, playoff teams, thoughts, etc. Preseason, not too much to get into. I do like what Max Brosmer's doing with the Vikings in terms of getting at the backup spot, maybe the third string, but I think he has almost supplanted Sam Howell as number two, and I think better than Brett Rypien. Caleb Williams looked great for the Bears in his first drive, 5-7, 97 yards and a touchdown against the Bills, but it's so difficult to take a whole lot out of preseason. You got the Little League World Series going on still in Williamsport. Kudos to Little League team from Sioux Falls. They have staved off elimination. They believe they will play on Wednesday here against South Carolina, another elimination game. So if they win, they continue to advance. We'll see how far they can go. But good for them to, so far, 2-1 in the tournament play, so that's good. Let's see, anything else baseball related? You got the baseball, the Dodgers swept the Padres over the weekend. That was big. You have the Brewers, who won 14 in a row before losing. And, oh my gosh, they're 1-2 in their last three games. What is going on with them? But plenty of comebacks. This Brewers team, super good. We'll see if they've peaked a little bit too fast. They've lost 2 in a row now. 3 of 4. Ooh, what's going on with the Brew Crew? Cubs now just 7 games back. Padres 2 back of the Dodgers. You have the Phillies 5.5 up on the Mets. Mariners 1.5 games back of the Astros. Both teams currently on losing streaks. Twins suck. Tigers 9 games up on both the Guardians and Royals, and you still have the Blue Jays dominating here, 5.5 up on the Yankees, 6 up on the Red Sox. That will pretty much wrap it up here, I believe, for this week's edition. Oh, we had the NBA schedule was released last week. There will be a game on national television or streaming on one of the big platforms, either Peacock or Prime Video, every day of the week. Starting with the Sundays, it's like after football season, but they will have games every day of the week. It's remarkable. Every team got at least one nationally televised game, so we'll get some thoughts maybe on that next week. But next week is our big college football preview show. We will have our 12 playoff teams, Heisman Trophy. We'll have our conference championship picks. Our game, it's going to be a great show, so definitely tune in for that. Enjoy week zero here. It is here. College football's here. Then next week, it really all gets going, of course, on Thursday. And the games next week, just so good. You got Texas and Ohio State to start things off at noon Eastern. Then LSU and Clemson Saturday night. You have Virginia Tech, South Carolina. Ooh, But the big one, Notre Dame at Miami Sunday night. And Bill Belichick making his Tar Heel debut Monday night against TCU. It's going to be a great weekend of college football. Of course, on Labor Day weekend, should be good. But we'll talk much more about that next week. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Sports Block Podcast. You can get us on podcast.com or Spotify. Just search Sports Block. Follow me on Twitter at ND Stackin. Charlie Hildebrand on Twitter at CE Hildebrand. I'm on Facebook, Nathan Stackin. Travis Crins on Twitter at Travis Crins. A link to the podcast posted middle to later part of each week. This was our big finale for the conference previews, so we hope you enjoyed it, and we hope you tune in again next week for our the finale. This was the penultimate. Next week is the finale of our college football season preview, our month-long season preview that we do every year here on the Sports Block Podcast. So for Charlie, I'm Nathan, and Travis, thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you next week on another edition of the Sports Block Podcast.